What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 52 of The Overview. I'm Chan Man V, and joined today by Fish Sticks and surprisingly a sprinter, Jason, who just ran.
Are you really surprised? He's like always throwing food down his mouth like the last possible second. Like
he just ran from his show. He just ran from his desk.
Water, and I didn't want to leave on the floor. I had to run and go get it. I got long legs. I'm a giraffe. Let's go.
I wish I would have recorded that. That was
hilarious.
All of
this is true.
Yeah. But welcome, everybody. Got lots to talk about as usual. Not as much as we normally do. This week was a little bit slower in terms of news, but lots of events going on and lots of playing from you guys, right? You guys getting a chance to play some Ladder, Orisa, maybe?
Yeah, I've been trying to. I don't know what's going on with this season. My luck has not been so great. About 2 weeks ago, I took a 400 SR tumble.
Ooh.
And have just slowly been like climbing my way back up. But you know, I'll win 3-4 games in a row, and then I'll lose 5 games in a row. And I've just been on the treadmill, man. It's been a little bit rough.
I've been having problems with like I'll win 20 points, but I'll lose like 30.
Wait.
So like at the end of the day, I'm still negative points.
Okay.
But yeah. It's like the most frustrating thing ever. But no, So I've had a couple of tumbles. I've, you know, had 400 SR swings here or there. But when you have a lot of pro players in a friends list to play with, you kind of can get carried sometimes. Though, if you ask Too Easy, I was playing with him last night. You ask him, my Reinhardt carried the hell out of him. I had some ridiculous Earth Shatters, but yeah, pro
so
players.
You're still playing Reinhardt mainly in ranked?
Which is so annoying to do. But when you're against dive comp as a Reinhardt, you kind of just stand there and twiddle your thumbs and hope your team, you hope your Ana doesn't die, basically. It's frustrating. I'll never be a good Genji, but I'm trying to play some Winston now.
Yeah, I was about to say, why not bring out the Winston?
I don't know.
I'm basically reinforced.
Kaiser seems to do fine with Reinhardt, man.
I'm kidding, reinforced.
I don't know. Reinhardt still...
Well, yeah, it's hard against Divecom. Like, there's a lot of problems where you can't ever get ult percent. Because their fire strikes will 90% of the time miss because they have...
Yeah.
Well, a Genji who can reflect, a Tracer who can dodge. Genji who can dodge, a Winston who can jump. And then their supports are so far away that the chance of hitting them is really low. So you have to kind of depend on hitting that third DPS if they run triple DPS dive. It's just, it's annoying. You really can't do much when they dive your back line with them, but that's either here or there because it's all about dive comps now.
Well, you know, that's the reason why you're getting less points when you win than when you lose.
Yeah, because you're not doing anything.
You're not putting up any stats. That's why.
It feels bad, man.
That's actually been one of my pet peeves this whole season long is... Dive comps are super popular now, but at the rank that I'm playing at, like mid-low masters, unfortunately, people are not really that comfortable with dive comps. And I cannot tell you how many games I have lost where it's like, we get a Winston, and we get a Genji, and then we get a McCree and a Roadhog. And you're like, oh, this is like the most... I've had that exact composition or something very similar to it probably 24 times in like the 30 or 40 games I've played. Season, so many people like refuse to switch off Hog. So you've got half the team like, come on, guys, let's do a dive comp. No one really wants to play Ryan, let's be honest. And then, but there's that guy who just won't switch off Roadhog. So that's
so you end up losing because of it, right?
Yeah,
that's pretty tough.
That's when you yell in comms and say, guys, you have a halfway to a dive comp, you have halfway to a triple tank comp. Decide what we're gonna do because this isn't gonna work half and half.
Yeah,
you're just half assing both comps, and that never works.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
That's been my life, though.
You guys get a chance to play Orisa?
Yeah, this morning, as you can see if you're watching the stream, not listening, but those tuning in live right now or watching on Twitch, I'm home, so I maybe snuck in a few games when I should have been working.
Maybe.
Don't tell anybody. There's no way that they'll ever know.
You're working on your other
screen,
right?
Games.
That's how it's
working. Yeah, right now, totally. Well, I'm doing Twitch-related stuff, so
that's right. He totally is.
But... Yeah, I played a couple games with Orisa this morning, and I don't know. I'm not really sure exactly what to think yet. A couple things are very apparent, and it's not none of this should come as a surprise to anyone, really. But some things are standing out to me. For instance, she's really good against taking down Reinhardt shields. So if the other team is running a more standard Ryan-based composition, you can deal a lot of damage to that shield quite quickly. So it almost is like, you don't necessarily, if you also are doing something not like a dive comp, like something with anchor tanks, Orisa almost kind of plays like a Roadhog-esque role where you can just bust down the shield really, really fast. Or not as fast as a Roadhog, but like it kind of plays that similar role. Of course, her barrier is pretty good too. Haven't made too much use of her right click, but I did get sucked into the pit once on Ilios by somebody else, some other Orisa. So you can see the potential. But I do really wonder how she's going to fare against any kind of dive comp. Like, she does okay against Winston, I will say that. But her gun, you can't hit anything that's moving at all. Like, the projectile speed is so slow that you cannot hit a Genji or a Tracer or a Pharah at all for your life. It's kind of hard.
I mean, I don't think you're supposed to be able to hit those characters, unfortunately.
Well, here's the question, right?
Yeah.
Is that, and I think, Chairman, you'll agree with me on this, I feel like Orisa in a current state is weak. But I feel like that was the intention of Blizzard. Release her a little bit weak, like they did with Anna, like they done with Sombra, and fine-tune her, just make her stronger over time so she doesn't take the meta by storm.
Yeah. I mean, I think they might have had Orisa in mind when they were thinking about making a higher skill cap tank. And, you know, one of the ways to make a tank higher skill cap is to make the tank a little bit easier to kill, you know, when it's not utilizing the wall and you know, maybe having to even plan out just how you position. You know, we saw a little bit of Orisa even in Carbon, and just how they were using was more around corners, you know, using the wall to kind of just solidify corners and things like that, versus just using just a normal shield. So yeah, she's going to start off weak. I wouldn't be surprised, but I don't know. We've seen some crazy things with her right click, even in highlight videos and clips. And I'm pretty excited to see what people are going to be doing with that. But I can only see her in like a triple tank type of meta right now. And that scares me. I don't want to see that anymore, man.
All right. I'll do my little rant on her.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, she's playable in like a triple quad tank setup where you have like a Zarya, a Reinhardt, maybe even a D.Va thrown there, because you have so much shield and barrier to work with.
Yep.
That's really hard to actually penetrate that. So if you're going to fight it, you're going to fight with a dive comp, which is what everyone's playing. So great. Not going to really work in that current composition. Two, and this is something Ben and I just talked about a little bit earlier on, I feel like she should have a movement ability. I mean, she's a freaking centaur. She has four legs. You think she would have a charge or a dash, but no. She's basically the slowest moving hero in the game, it feels like. So she has no escape potential unless you rely on your teammates. She can be decent against dive, depending on how you use her. For instance, if you use it to pull a Winston, a Tracer, a Genji off of someone against like really organized teams, you can clear your support and keep them alive, plus the shield as well to mitigate some damage. But the problem is that you put her in, then who are you taking out? Yeah. And you're not running a dive comp yourself, so you can't really run dive versus dive kind of thing. I feel like D.Va is like the sickest hard counter against her. Like, Ben, you're talking about right clicks and how you can use that. And well, it's so slow that D.Va can block it like almost every single time. And her bullets are so slow that, all right, well, you just mitigated like half her entire clip with your defense matrix. Yeah. And then you can just rush her down. And even at the same time, she feels so squishy. Even with, you know, half her health being armor, she still only has 400 effective health. Well, it's actually higher than that, but whatever. She has like 400 HP, right?
Yeah, true.
But I get two shot by Widows all the time playing her, and you just die so quickly. Even your fortified doesn't seem to really keep you alive that much. And the kind of the biggest gripe I have about her, well, not necessarily a gripe, but the fact of it seems like every hero that's been released by Blizzard with Anna, with Sombra, and now with Orisa, not including like Mei and Genji, it feels like you need a comp to fit around this hero to make it work. It's not just a hero you can put into the game and it can be played in the current meta. Like when Anna came out, we got 2-2-2s. It wasn't working well. Then we saw the triple quad tanks, and that's when Anna became powerful. With Sombra, you need to run a Lucio and a Zenyatta. And you need to, well, sorry, not an Anna. You need to run a Lucio and a Zenyatta, not an Anna, because Anna completely Fs up the entire aspect of her ability for ultimate quickly. It's using EMP to engage. Now, Orisa, you need to run like a triple quad tank setup with barriers, but that's not in the meta right now. It's all about dive comp. So it's just really frustrating. And I know I've been talking for a long time. It's really kind of frustrating to kind of incorporate her into the mix. But as a hero, I love her kit. The only gripe I have about her kit is her ultimate, though, because every tank has like a big slap your dick on the table ultimate. And hers is like, all right, I'll put a little thing down to give you guys more damage. It's a support ultimate. It's not like a, you know, a killing ultimate kind of thing. So
I mean,
I like her, but she's really hard to play right now.
That's a good point. I mean, your last statement there, that she's a support. I feel like she is a support character more than she is a tank. And the only reason she's a tank is because of there's a big wall, which for me is more similar to a Mei wall than it is any kind of Reinhardt shield or anything like that. So she is right in the middle between tank and support, and because of that, she doesn't survive. I'm actually okay with the fact that with them making characters that require a composition to be built around it, because that encourages a different meta. We didn't quite see it with Sombra. You know, nothing's changed to that extent with Sombra, but I'm generally okay with that because it just keeps things changing.
Really quickly before Ben cuts in here, sorry, just about that specific topic, is that... Oh, God, I lost my thought. Oh, yeah.
Oh my God.
Because there's so many different ways you can go with heroes, like so many different abilities, so many untapped or unused abilities currently, like, hey, how about a button you hit that whatever damage you take, you regen over 10 seconds. So if they don't kill you, you have longevity kind of thing. Like, there's these little niches that can still be played, yeah. Which is why I don't think they could implement, like, a McCree 2.0, you know, because you don't want to focus on, all right, should I play this McCree or this McCree? You want to focus on an entirely new hero. All right, Ben, go. Sorry.
No, I just would just echo again. Like, it seems like there's definitely potential in this character. I don't want to write her off right now, but I definitely agree with some of the same frustrations you have, Jason. I think one of the easiest possible ways to give her a significant tuning, I guess, big buff perhaps as well, is to make her shift actually increase her speed.
Why not?
Make her shift, yeah. Like make her 50% faster, make her maybe even have a pushback. You know, there's a lot of analogies between her and Ryan. Why not make her have like the ability to gallop forward and maybe do some minimal amount of damage, like 25, 50 damage to whoever's in her path. She can then get in there, get right into the middle of the action, get back into the action from spawn faster. I think this would make her a lot more satisfying to play. And yeah, I wish every character in the game had a movement mechanic. So I'm sort of biased in that front, but I think that would be a really simple, easy way that Blizzard's probably thought of. I mean, like you said, she's a freaking centaur. She looks like she should be able to gallop.
Yeah, she should definitely. I think the shift is a good option to give her just temporary speed. Maybe it's just like 2 seconds of real get out of this spot, you know, kind of thing. And
it's your oh shit button.
Exactly.
It literally is your oh shit button. Even when you use it currently in the meta or a currently player, it's like, oh, I'm taking too much damage. I need to stay alive. Why not give it mobility?
You might need, I think even generally, they might need to lower the cooldown on that shift too, just even for the armor and immunity, because otherwise I just don't see how she lives very, very long. It's so hard right now. And I think we're going to be seeing the data really, really soon. I'm sure they'll be taking a look at that. But right now, it's pretty hard to play on the ladder. Like, I'm afraid even... If I play Orisa on the ladder, I'm just going to lose. Like, I just know that right now. So I'm very, very hesitant. And I don't know. I think generally speaking, I would guess that people that see an Orisa on the team probably aren't going to be happy with that. I don't know. What was the reaction like?
Somebody yelled at me and went, "You only have 11 minutes on Orisa."
I know. Like, that's like, an hour ago. More? How can I have more than that?
How could I possibly have more?
Exactly.
This is my second game with her. I won my first game. Chill out.
It's going to be a week of that, man. A week of raging when people pick Orisa. But hopefully after that, people will start to settle down.
Again, though, I will reiterate what we said last week and the week before, is her right click has the potential to make for some incredibly epic moments.
We have a clip of that as well.
That just shows it's not just sucking people into pits, but it's also plays like this that you're watching on screen right now. But I guess those of you tuning into the audio podcast, you can actually shoot Orisa's right click. And here comes the right click right over the Reinhardt shield. Here comes the big Earth Shatter. Wait, I can't. It's
not yet.
Okay, there it comes and pulls the right up. There comes the perfectly timed Earth Shatter. There you go. So
The right click. They ended up throwing the right click over the shield. It goes behind the Reinhardt, pulls the Reinhardt up, and then the ally Reinhardt ended up Earth Shattering underneath the shield. So that's a pretty cool play. Like, I didn't really think about that as being one of the ways to use it.
I'll tell you what, though, her right click is really frustrating to get hit by because it like disorients you. Mm-hmm. Like, it actually like really turns surprising. You a little bit and moves your aim.
It's like super surprising.
Yeah.
But D.Va's just gonna eat that for lunch.
I'm telling you, like, if you see her play,
D.Va's gonna be totally.
I mean, she's a decent counter to Roadhog because you can't hook her, and like your armor mitigates each individual pellet they get hit with.
Sure.
So she doesn't really, you can't really burst her down, but then again, she can't escape you because she can't run away.
Yeah, very true. Well, hopefully all of you guys listening will get a chance to definitely play Arista some. But why don't we move on to some of the events that are going on? Because there's three big ones that are going on. It seems like there's always three. But one concluded this past week, so we'll be down to two following, or at least going into this weekend. So why don't we start with Carbon playoffs? The grand finals happened this past weekend, or was it Friday, Saturday? I was out of town, so I had to actually catch up on the VODs yesterday. But I think it happened on Saturday, I believe. One of those days, Friday or Saturday. Anyways, Immortals ended up taking it 3-1. Spoilers for anybody that didn't watch it. Taking it 3-1 over LG Evil. And I think to a lot of folks that been watching the entire season of Carbon, that was a surprise. Just given that LG Evil, I don't know how many times they played Immortal. They probably played Immortal 4 times in the season, and they didn't lose to them. So Immortal got them on the very last one, the one that actually mattered the most. And overall, you know, that ended up being a successful, obviously, event for them. They played really, really well. I don't know if you guys were able to catch the finals. Did you guys watch it?
Yeah, watched the vast majority of that playoffs. If this taught me one thing about NA Overwatch, it's that you cannot have any expectations going to any tournament.
That's true.
Whichever team is currently at the top, 2 weeks later, it's going to be someone else. And we've seen this happen now several times. For a little while, for like a split second, people were like, okay, Renegades is the shit. Then it was Immortals is the shit. And then it was Hammers, aka LG Evil. Mm-hmm. But honestly, like, LG Evil did not look great. Like, I don't know if it was just a matter of other teams figuring them out. I mean, they were really pioneering, or not pioneering, but they were really fitting nicely into the dive comp strat meta. Mm-hmm. Yep. With Jake really shining, is playing a lot of Pharah, Genji. But man, that team just got completely figured out. And Immortals winning 3-1. Okay, it wasn't like it was a stomp. It wasn't like it was a one-sided stomp. And there were some razor thin moments. In fact, I actually included a clip that maybe we can play on stream at some point. Of just one of those moments that was totally, absolutely insane. But still, like, from my perspective, I just don't know what to think about NA anymore. It doesn't seem like any team is going to be top of the pack for any amount of time whatsoever. Also, I think the other really interesting thing for me is the fact that Immortals isn't really doing the dive comp thing. They're still running a lot of Roadhog and not really doing exactly what most other teams seem to be fitting towards. And so, you know, in NA, you've got teams like Immortals and Selfless that are just basically like sidestepping this dive comp predominant meta a bit.
Well, I mean, I think they're just playing what they can play, like at an optimal level. And, you know, Immortals had 4 tries, I believe. I mean, somebody might have to correct me there. I think they've had 4 tries in the past at trying to figure out LG Evil. And this time around, they definitely did some different things. I mean, I saw Hyped on some comps, or Hyped playing some characters that he didn't play in the past, at least in the matchups, because he was primarily just playing Zarya most of the time. But I saw him.
Yeah, he brought out D.Va a bit.
Yeah, Zarya, D.Va. Oh, sorry, not Pharah. I saw him on Pharah, D.Va, Tracer. He played Orisa for a moment even on one of the maps. So I think Hyped for me stood out the most. He even played super well too. I think
he was
that
a standout player at NGE, right, as well?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, yeah, sure. Grim played great too at NGE, right? And some of the other DPS players. But his play stood out the most to me. I think a lot of what LG Evil does, you know, with the dive comp, or just any dive comp, right, it relies heavily on your Genji, heavily on those nano-boosted blades, and they just didn't pull them off this time around. You know, like, I'm used to Jake killing the back line at least 2 guys, right? At least 3 guys. About half the time, you know, they were able to take care of him, you know, just on without him even killing anybody. So I think that was the biggest difference that I could see. I don't know, Ben, what else did you notice that was different than some of the other matches they had in the past?
I'm trying to think, like, it's not like LG Evil did anything different. I think the main thing is people just are starting to figure out how to deal with dive comps in general. Mm-hmm. And this LG Evil squad. And you can't forget Immortals has guys like Grim Reality on the team. In my opinion, Grim Reality is probably top three hit scan in NA, if not, you know, the best in NA right now. His hit scan is absolutely sickeningly, insanely good. It doesn't even look legit. Like, that's how good it is when you watch. So I don't know. Just watching Grim Reality play is like always an absolute pleasure for me. Like, this guy is insane.
Yeah, Jason, did you catch any of it or no?
To be honest, no, because it's usually on at like a really bad time.
Yeah, it is a really bad time.
Over here in Europe, but I'm going to go back and watch the VODs very soon. I mostly focused on Apex because of how like insane all the games have been lately. But we'll get to that in a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think Grim played great. I mean, there were definitely moments. I felt like in the past, they were able to contain Grim a lot more. But there were definitely some maps where Grim just had high ground and he was just having a field day, basically. And you can't give that guy any room or else he'll just be, you know, just owning you big time. So, you know, I think Stitch is too. I think both their DPS players played super great. So the combination of those two and Hype together, I think really, really stood out. So bummer for LG Evil. You know, I felt like 2 weeks ago, LG Evil was just on the rise. And then, you know, they ran into, Selfless and Selfless. And it wasn't even Rogue in the monthly melee. And then from there, they've kind of dropped a little bit. And after this loss, too, it's a little bit of a knockback. But like you said, every NA team, I feel like, has a few weeks in the sun and then they just get knocked down and have to, you know, kind of get rejuvenated and try to climb that mountain again. But we'll have to see what happens.
It's happened many times.
Yeah, they're both in the pit tournament too. So we'll get a chance to see them really, really soon. And I'm showing that highlight that Ben talked about here. And it was that moment where this is the one where Hype totally baited them, right? Hype like walked into the room in Dorado and just like sat there standing still. He literally just
Hype was like, "Yes, I'll get slept and then I'll get charged."
Exactly.
But I think it actually just goes to show you, like, ZP over the weekend actually was talking a little bit about why Overwatch is so exciting, but also why it's like so difficult to watch and really fully understand the intricacies. Because in this moment in particular, I thought Hype was a goner. He's slept in the middle of the entirety of the rest of the enemy team. He gets charged, but as he's getting charged, he's being healed by his friendly Ana, and that Ana has the trust in Hype to drop down, of course, the nano boost, which is what keeps him alive. And then Hype is able to drop a graviton and completely shift what looked like it was a sure win for LG Evil, 100% the other way. So little moments like that are really what make and break tournaments for, you know, your entire tournament could come down to something like that. And it did.
It did. Times. Yeah. I mean, it was the reason why they were able to push all the way to the end of the island. So, yeah, definitely kudos to Hyped and to the Immortal team. And hopefully we'll see them do well in the Pit Championship, too, that's happening right now. I think the NA bracket starts this week, because last week was the EU bracket, right? So, or the EU groups. We'll start seeing. Hopefully they're not in the same group. I hope Immortals and LG are not in the same group this time around, because I've seen them play so many times now that I'd kind of like to see
Immortals and
matchup.
LG Evil both in Group A.
Oh god!
It's Immortals, Complexity, Luminosity Gaming, Evil, Rise Nation, CLG, and Selfless. And Group B is FaZe Clan, Luminosity Gaming, Loyal, Team Liquid, Renegades, Rogue, and You Guys Get Paid.
Oh my god! Okay, that first group looks a little bit crazier to me than that second one.
I can see a clear three being there.
Yeah.
I mean, CLG, like, is this honestly, no offense to them, I just have seen them ever since.
They haven't played in a single tournament.
They haven't. Yeah, they haven't
not even
anything.
One. Or maybe they played in like the Comp OW, like whatever those tournaments are called.
Like, I'm looking and like, okay, they open qualifier for Overwatch Pit, they 2-0'd Gale Force. Then before that was Rivalcade, where they played against Denial and lost. Then they played before that Enter the Arena Overwatch. They lost to Gale Force, lost to Tempo Storm before that, lost to Nameless before, or beat Nameless. Then, like, yeah, I don't know. It just hasn't really been any decent places, I guess, out of them so far. But
yeah,
hopefully this is a chance. Maybe they'll surprise us. Hey, I mean, Hammers did. Hammers sure as hell totally, did. Yeah. Everyone knows this when they showed up anywhere monthly melee. So
yeah. All right. Well, why don't we talk about Overwatch Pit Championship? Jason, we lead us through this a little bit. I'll bring up the
yeah. So the let's see. Stuff. Group A concluded just yesterday, I believe it was, with NIP placing first at 4-1. Well, technically first, since they did beat United in the head-to-head matchup. And they actually started off really rough in the entirety of this one. They lost to Laser Kittens, and everyone kind of looked at that like, "Wow, is Laser Kittens like really that good, or is NIP really not playing that well?" And I think it was kind of a little bit of a mix of both. Nesh over on Laser Kittens has been, like Uber and I have been talking about him in the office, pretty damn ridiculous as a DPS player, really stand out for his team. But NIP as well have been struggling a little bit to really get their identity back since like triple quad tank is now basically gone. You can still obviously run it if you're really good at it, but they have to adapt to new things. I should see Zap is switching to quite a few different heroes. Mafu's been switching away from Zarya. Time, you know, here and there. Fraggy's been playing some Winston. So NIP's, I don't mean it in a harsh way, but are definitely nowhere near as good as they were when triple quad tank setup was like the thing. So they're trying to get back to where they can be, but they still place first. So you really can't discredit them, right? Yeah. United, though, placing second at 4-1. So I've gotten to watch some of their scrims, and I've skimmed through most of the VODs that they played in the Overwatch pit, and they seem to be stuck to dive comp and dive comp only. So something kind of similar to what we saw Hammers do before with like triple quad tank only, except that we know that Hammers has a deeper pool. I haven't really seen Cruz on much other than Genji. Like, we obviously know that he can play Lucio from what we've seen before and from prior, but he's been pretty much stuck to Genji. And we've seen Valtaja on Tracer for the most part, Unfixed flexing between like Pharah and Soldier. We did see a glimpse of them doing like their standard, like a standard two, double or 2-2-2 or triple tank setup on one of the Oasis maps. I think it was on University, but it wasn't really effective. So maybe they are just kind of riding the wave of the meta and playing what's really popular now, and then we'll worry about it later on when the meta shifts to having to relearn and play that kind of way. And then Laser Kittens, like, I'll just give them a quick shout out. Yeah, out of all five of their matches, four of them went the full three maps. Yeah. And the fifth one that didn't go full three maps because they 2-0'd Gamers Origin. So really pushing like some of these teams like NIP, United, VV's Adventure is actually a really, really strong up and coming team. Seen a lot in the Go For series. So honestly, credit to them. Again, Nesh really standing out for his team. Kib, it's his big comeback since Reunited days back at the ISL or the Overwatch Atlantic Showdown, where he was playing for United. Then he actually just kind of left before Korea. So yeah, for the majority of that's pretty much been happening for Group A of the Overwatch Pit. For Group B, though, we got Misfits, Hammer Esports, Movie Star Riders, Dizitas, X-Alternate, and Team Singularity Ninjas still to play. I'm not sure when that... I think it's actually started today, if I'm not mistaken, because I already see some results with Misfits having 1-0.
It's beginning. It's going on right now, I think.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like some great games still to come.
Oh, man, it's so refreshing to have a tournament with all of these European teams that we haven't seen in so long, including a lot of teams that have just formed or reformed or added a player here or there. So a lot of storylines going on in the EU side, and it's a good opportunity to see, like, where's Dignitas been? How good are
seriously.
They?
Seriously.
How is EU United now that they've kind of reformed the old Reunited squad? You know, all these storylines going into this, I'm super excited, but really, Misfits have to be just the clear favorite for this whole EU side, right?
We say Jason. That. We always say something like that. Yeah.
I'm not sure I see a scrims between them and NIP. And they went like decently even on some of the maps. I'm not gonna say like what maps in particular. But I mean, just the lineup Misfits has is like all superstar caliber.
Yeah. I agree with that. Every time we say that, it's like clear thing. I guess maybe with exception of Rogue. Rogue ended up winning, you know, just things like the monthly melee, even though everybody picked them to win it right from the start. We always seem to be wrong, but I would say Misfits here is like a very, very big favorite. But like you said, I can't wait to check out VV's Adventure. Like, I know nothing about VV's Adventure. And even
I actually scrimmed against them, funny enough.
Oh, really? Okay.
I scrimmed against them when Cafe, he played for the Israeli team in the World Cup.
Okay.
Ranked number one on EU ladders right now. Plays Zarya for his team. And we scrimmed against this team because they needed like a Reinhardt player. And all they did to us was run dive. And it absolutely shit on me every time because this is like one of my first scrims and I'm playing Reinhardt against a dive comp. But definitely a team full of like strong players. Let me look at the ladder really quick.
Well, while you're looking at it, I also want to call out movie star Riders actually ended up beating Dignitas already today, apparently. Wow.
Okay.
So this is a team to watch out for, guys. It's got, let's see, not a ton of names that I know super well, but Neptuno, who played on Team Spain. Neptuno.
Yeah.
Who's a former CS pro from way back in the day. So this is definitely, you know, with that result alone, this is absolutely a team to watch out for.
Yeah, they're ex-Mouse Sports. Dante has a pretty ridiculous tracer. Like, he's really high up on the ladder as well as Swoosh. Like, most, if not all, these guys have been top 500 every single season. Yeah, like, really, really strong lineup. Like, I don't really know Colsty that often, but Finzi, Dante, Swoosh, Logix, Neptuno, I know, and they're good. They just haven't had that breakthrough. They've mostly grinding out the Go4s on Sundays from what I've seen. Mm-hmm. So this is, like, their first, I guess, like, or one of their first big real chances to actually make a name for themselves. So I know they'll definitely be like honing in their skills and running to show everyone what they've got.
It's great. I mean, this is exactly what Europe's been asking for, or at least the European teams have been just starving for, is just some type of stage for them to get a chance to play some teams, especially NA teams, just cross regional teams. Because the Koreans are not going to be playing the online ones, unfortunately. We're going to be seeing this for a while. So anyway, check it out. Yeah, definitely check
like
out.
Like Brazil can say they beat the winner of Apex Season 2.
True.
Yeah. Yeah.
True. Technically.
Yeah, technically. Technically.
And just since I'm wearing this beautiful Quake Champions shirt, I gotta commiserate a little bit that the X-Rocks guys went out 1-4 in their group. Cooler and Cypher are still both on that team, right? I think.
Are they? Really?
Yeah.
Or at least Cooler is.
Yep.
So
they both are.
Rip Quake boys. Rip. Oh well.
Quake guys, man. I don't know.
Actually, their Reinhardt player on X-Rocks is like insane. I played against that guy so many times, and he just wrecks me every time. I've seen him be able to take on some like the best Reinhardt players in Europe and beat them. I don't even know where the hell he came from. I don't even know how to say his name. It's like pure Russian. I think it's Alexei.
It's in Russian? Mm-hmm. I guess his name? Yep. Oh, wow. Okay. That might be a problem for casters.
I'll put it in chat for you. I'm pretty sure it's like
I'm pretty sure that's Alexei because I've read Alexei a lot.
Yeah,
it's a pretty common name. Yeah,
I work with White Raw Alexei.
Oh, yeah.
Krupnik? I actually don't know how to say his last name.
Okay.
That guy's insane, yeah.
Definitely check out the matches. They might be going on like right this second. So, maybe put it on your other screen and check it out. Okay, next event we have, of course, is Apex. Apex was in full swing in the semifinals for Season 2. And let me get this up here. All right, so we started off last Friday, or this past Friday, with Runaway versus LW Blue. And Runaway ended up taking the 3-2. So a great series, really, really tight. This was the one I was looking forward to most, to be honest. Like, I didn't actually anticipate the second one to be that close, but ended up being a very, very great series too with Lunatic High and Minathena. But Runaway is the team that I picked to win this thing, and I'm still rooting for hardcore. But I knew they'd run into a big challenge with Flower and just all the guys in the LW Blue with Sebi Olby and even Luna at times. Luna's been struggling, but I think generally Luna's been a pretty good Ana. But you guys get a chance to catch these at all? Like, I know it's a pretty tough time again for you, Jason. But you catch like
mainly catching up on results and highlights.
Yeah. Okay.
I haven't had a chance to watch through the whole games.
Okay.
I'm just gonna say, I'm depressed that Meta Athena's out. I think everyone is. Like, this is the fan favorite team of the century. They pull even in their loss. They were the story of that match just because of all the crazy, batshit insane strategies that they are always pulling out every time, innovating with Sombra, innovating with Mei, constantly. They did this one boost.
Yeah, let me bring
that was
up.
That was on Dorado. Popping up.
Dorado, yeah, over the
yeah
the roof.
What the hell, it's crazy. It's
yeah,
awesome.
Here you go, check it out. Yeah, and I mean, it was kind of funny because Monty and Doe were casting it like, they're taking a really roundabout way and trying to just trying to flank them, right? And then I think it's Libero, right, was playing the Mei, and he's just like sitting there for a second. It's like, oh crap, they're going over the roof here. I'm not sure if it was a crazy position necessarily, but it definitely surprised them. And what was interesting about Lunatic High, they seemed to suspect something, so they were already backing up too. So they were like, what's going on here? I don't see anybody anywhere. So there's definitely something up.
That whole Dorado was just really weird, because not only on the first point did they basically switch sides, the defending team was on the payload and the attacking team was coming from the defending side, but later on to the second phase, the same thing happened, and even the third phase. Like, it was insane how they kept this Mei play the entire time to constantly outposition Lunatic High. Obviously, in the end, it didn't really work out for them, but yeah, that was honestly really cool to see. And, you know, you have to give credit to a team that keeps innovating. Like, I think back to... Boostmeister for DreamHack Winter back in 2015, I think it was, with Ulfmeister Fnatic and Counter-Strike, where they like found this really nifty boost spot. Yeah, they found it on Reddit, actually, but they found it and they used it in this play, and it was a big controversy. But to have like teams constantly looking for these other angles, you know, thinking outside the box to come up with new strategies or new positions to attack from, is always really great to see.
It even started off, right, in Dorado with Libero on Sombra. And, you know, we saw last week Libero had an amazing, hack on Zarya, just on Hanamura, right? When he threw the teleporter over the gate and came in there. Well, he started off Dorado by aiming to the sky. He actually started off stealth and he ran, somewhere near the marketplace area. And he just like stood there for a while and just like aiming to the sky. And we're just kind of like waiting, right? And then he just threw the teleporter and, you know, he was obviously in a position where normally the tanks would have been, and he would have been able to hack somebody. And he almost hacked D.Va. He just was barely out of range. But you could tell that, you know, they practiced that a million times, you know, and that's the kind of thing that, you know, you and your friends go and just screw around. Just like, hey, I want to, like, land exactly right here, you know, like, by doing that. It's like, what star in the sky do I aim for, you know, type of thing when I'm standing here.
COD 4. Exactly. That's basically all it is.
Exactly, man. So,
Pixel nades.
Pixel nades. It's great to see them actually doing that, and I think they've, like you said, Ben, they're the most innovative one, definitely a fan favorite because of that. I'd say Lunatic High is, at least in Korea, still the big fan favorite, right? I believe that's generally what the casters have been saying.
With the fangirls, yes.
Yeah, with the fangirls.
So the amount of screams I hear when Eska pulls off a sick play.
Yeah, yeah. Which Eska, speaking of Eska, he was clutch this series, and even, I would say, part of last series. Because Eska was one of the weak points the entire season. I have to say, like, that was probably the biggest difference between Lunatic High and Mei at the end of this time around, is that Eska was just owning. It wasn't even just playing adequately. He was owning with Tracer. And sometimes when I'm watching these matches in Apex, I'm just like, it's amazing. Like, these Tracers just get a shit. They just do whatever the hell they want. Like, nobody's even trying to shoot them at times, because I don't know if it's just the priority of who to kill. But Tracers, I feel like, have full reign at times, whenever just the beginning of fights, at least. And whoever obviously deals out the most damage just ends up just going nuts. And Eska was getting the better end of that, like, for the majority of that series. Kind of definitely sad that Medathina's gone. You know, I've been enjoying Libero's play, too, just this entire event. So going to be sad that he's going to be out. But Lunatic High in the finals again, right? Like, I don't think a lot of people thought they would make it this time around. But sure enough, they're back there and got a chance to get revenge.
Third time's a charm? Lost to Rogue.
Oh, APAC. That's
Apex,
right.
They lost to Envious, and now third time.
That's right. But actually, going back to Runaway, like, I don't know if you guys caught any of that. That series was super entertaining to watch, because there would be times where you're like, oh gosh, Runaway is just going to destroy LW Blue, especially after the first map where just they couldn't stop Hawksaw and the Nanoblade. I mean, it was just killing everybody, and it was like the super easiest map. And then for some reason, they just stopped playing that comp. Like, they decided to try something different. And then, LW Blue was able to, you know, take the next map and get momentum, actually. So it kind of went back and forth, and there'll be times where it's like, you know what, I don't think LW Blue's not playing that well, but somehow they're still going to win this map, you know? Or Runaway is just getting, they're just getting killed like over and over again, but the payload's not moving at all. It just stays in the same place. And I don't know, if you guys get a chance, watch that series, and I feel like Runaway is the best team at stalling out payloads, stalling out CP, like double CP maps. And, you know, it's something that's not usually talked about you know, just the ability to do that, because it's not that flashy, right? It's not, you're not killing anybody necessarily, but you know, they're able to pull that out. They're able just to suck up all the time bank, you know, for a lot of these maps, and you know, that's the difference in a lot of their wins. So yeah, it's something cool to notice. Kaiser, man, best Reinhardt in the world for sure, and he got so many Earth Shatters that were so clutch. Literally, he doesn't get those Earth Shatters, they lose. You know, he had probably two or three of those. So he's definitely, I mean, for me, he's the best Reinhardt in the world. And then even Sabiobi, like I actually didn't really notice him as much actually leading into this this series, even though he's been solid this entire time. But he really, really stood out this series, though. Just the anchor for their team. I mean, he was always the one. He was playing Tracer, obviously, but I felt like, you know, he was never dying early. You know, like at times you would have, you know, Flower dying early, or you know, and it would just totally swing the map. But Sabioli was just always solid the entire time. Luna and Janna's didn't play so great, and I think that might have ended up costing them. But great series, though. I think both of them, like Metathena and versus Lunatic High and Runaway and LW Blue, were great. So hopefully you guys get a chance to watch those VODs. This whole season,
dude,
has been awesome. It's like crazy good. Like crazy.
I'm so hyped for this finals, honestly. Like I was commiserating the death of Meta Athena just because they pulled out so much cool stuff, but let's be honest, like Runaway versus Lunatic High is probably about as exciting as you could get. We're gonna see a lot of explosive Genji plays coming from both teams.
Man,
the dude who really originated Winston, Miro, can't forget about him. Always a fan favorite, always pulling out cool stuff as well. So this is going down April 8th at 1800 KST. So pretty early in the morning for anyone on the West Coast.
Yeah, the storylines are just great. Like Runaway was in promotions last season. Lunatic High, you know, again, like finished second last season. So we've got great storylines just clashing together here. And like you said, the matchups are great. You got stars at all the positions going at each other. So anyways, Apex, I just feel like it's been an awesome event this season. As a fan, just as a fan of Overwatch, I've just been having a great time watching it. And, you know, I can't watch it live, unfortunately, but, man, I've been watching every single VOD.
Before we move on from Apex, by the way, I mean, Lunatic High wasn't in the finals of Apex last season, but to me, them playing against Envious was the final. Seeing Envious smash AF Blue was not really fun.
No.
But there's a Reddit thread 2 days ago, I don't know if you guys caught it, about Runner, actually, about the player in Runaway.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah, yeah.
I just wanted to bring that to light if people haven't really seen it yet, because there's some really cool facts about him, like dating back to Faker. I just wanted to read a couple of them if we had, you know, just a little couple seconds for it.
Sure, yeah, let me bring
So before Overwatch, Runner was a professional streamer. He streamed League of Legends, which is primarily the reason he became famous.
Oh, really?
As African, no
idea.
An African TV streamer. Then he hosted many Runner League tournaments. When the game was still at its beginning stages, when the state of League of Legends was similar to the current state of Overwatch. Faker, at the time, who was a completely unknown amateur, had an extremely hard time finding sponsors and teams that would recruit him. He was a complete newbie compared to Ambition, currently in SSG, who was very famous at that time. So that's when Runner invited Faker to participate in the Runner League to show that he's good enough to become a pro, and of course, performed extremely well there, and now Faker is a god. And this even technically extends now into Overwatch with what he's been able to do as well. Let me find the one in particular I was looking
at. It was Kaiser, right? Or
that's what the Lunatic High got. Yeah, so Runner, along with Bakyum, if I'm saying his name correctly, who was a sponsor for BK Stars, are the ones who discovered the talents of Miro, the best Winston player in the world, and Haxel, and brought him into the current Overwatch pro scene. The first big Overwatch League, which was held in Korea before Apex Season 1, was the BJ League, which was hosted by Runner and Bakyum together. The participants were unknown amateurs at the time, which included Miro, Haxel, Jaehong, Eska, etc. And after the BJ League, and all the participants received a ton of attention for their fresh talent, which resulted in fans voting for Ruge Jaehong and Eska for the World Cup roster. Haxel was underage, so he couldn't be voted. Like, this guy, he's been around for such a long time. And of course, there's more with Stitch Bumper. Actually, yeah, that's even a good one, because it talks about like the team and what's happened to them. Runner discovered Stitch Bumper, Kaiser, and Shine, and Cox, and formed the team Runaway.
Wow.
All of the processes of recruiting these fresh players were recorded in his streams for weeks, and that was very entertaining to watch, because he basically shared with his fans how he carefully considered rebuilding the Runaway roster. He exposed us to the whole process of trial scrims of players like Stitch and Cox until the stage where he finalized the roster for Apex Season 2. Oh, yeah. And Jay Hong helped run her through the whole process by introducing various connections that were not exactly revealed. So, like, this guy, my hardcore esports guy,
yeah,
forming teams left and right, making stars out of people who never would have had a chance.
Not to mention, he's a pretty good player, too.
He's like the too good of Korea.
The too good.
Introducing Tvik to the world. Okay. No, maybe. Never mind.
Okay. All right. Okay. I don't know about that, but Runner's a pretty damn good player too.
Hopefully.
So yeah, like no, that's really great. He seems like a really great guy. I mean, he's still, you know, we were talking about his after, you know, post victory type of celebrations and stuff, and he looks like a fun dude. So great to see, great to hear, and I'm sure a lot of these players are very appreciative of him too. And, you know, with this kind of thing, he's probably a future coach, too. I think after he plays, he's probably going to be coaching a team or maybe running a team. That sort
Could
of
be.
Thing.
Should be.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I think that's going to be it. Again, check out the finals when you can. Why don't we give a shout-out to some of the folks that are listening to the show or listen to the show on iTunes. Those you might not know that watch on Twitch every week, we are available on iTunes as well as Google Podcasts and SoundCloud. You can find us there if you want to, you know, listen on the way to work or in your car or any of that. We get these tweets sometimes with pictures of people that are listening into their car, so you can actually see it on the LEDs and stuff. It's kind of cool. But I want to give a shout-out to Gil Frost and BJoy612 for leaving 5-star reviews and some nice comments for us. If you want to help the show, help folks find the overview when searching for Overwatch podcasts, go ahead and leave us a 5-star review. You know, it doesn't take very much time, and you know, really helps out help us out in a big, big way. Okay, we got a discussion topic, Ben, that you wanted to bring up. You want to lead us into this?
Sure.
One?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whenever we get a chance to nerd out about esports business, I'll take that opportunity. And this one's an interesting article published, or not even an article, but a research deep dive that Morgan Stanley did on Overwatch League, trying to predict what this could mean for Activision shareholders. Of course, Morgan Stanley primarily advising on this from a stock trading perspective. But they predict that they think I'm going to poke some fun at this too, because it's kind of an absurd statement. But they think that Overwatch League should hit about $100 million in revenue. Doesn't say when, doesn't say which year, but it also says on the low end, it'll make at least $20 million. On the high end, it'll make up to $720 million.
How is there that disparity?
We predict it'll be $100 million. So they're giving themselves more than an order of magnitude, like a lot more than an order of magnitude.
It's like a weatherman
flexibility there, it's but like, you know what? Whatever. It's still some interesting discussion points, I think, there. And given, you know, the rumors that have been circulating the last couple of weeks about how much it's going to cost to get a franchise in the million to a couple million range, potentially, you know, there's going to be 16 teams. So if that is true, you're already talking, you know, 15 to 30 million potentially in just getting franchise slots. Then, of course, there's going to be the ticketing for in-person events, which I wouldn't expect to be too big first year. Probably won't be big at all, honestly. I can't imagine there's going to be a ton of huge stadium events in year one, but we'll have to wait and see on that. But I think merchandising and in-game digital sales is where you could feasibly make up a lot of these a lot of this revenue. And then also, you can't forget broadcast rights. So they could sell the broadcast rights off to any streaming platform or TV networks or whatever. So I don't know. I don't want to read too much into this, A, because it's so hilariously ambiguous about, like, such a wide scale, but and B, you know, who knows? Like, it's all based off rumors and speculation at this point. But it is Morgan Stanley, guys. Like, you can't just brush this off as, like, a silly esports journalist that's just writing an expose. No, like, this is, like, a proper deep dive by people who know what the fuck they're talking about. So, I don't know.
So what Ben's basically saying is buy Activision stock. Is what
he's saying. I own some. I'll be honest. I own very little, but I own a little bit.
That's nice. What, Jason? No, that's pretty.
It counts.
What?
No. I mean, he owns some, but it counts.
Yeah, it definitely counts.
Now you know why I'm trying so hard to make this game successful.
That's right. That's right. No, I think that's great news. I mean, 100 million prediction is quite a bit. I think any league making any esport league at this point making like nine digits.
I don't even know how they can come up with that.
Yeah, exactly.
LCS doesn't even make a pot like in the first year at least, if not the second year. LCS didn't even make any money off LCS because all of them went right back into it, and they were still paying a ton of money to run it. Blizzard's almost
never even tried to make money off it, though.
I don't know. I'll always be skeptical when it comes to this kind of thing until I'm proven wrong. And I'm more than happy to be proven wrong, and I want to be proven wrong. But 100 million annually, like, I mean, would this be the first esport to make that kind of revenue? Or does, I don't know, actually, does Dota or CS count? I don't know that they make annually from their esports section.
I mean, TI, that's a good point, Jason. TI, yeah. If they could raise 20 plus million in compendium sales, that means that 60, 70 plus million went directly into the pockets of Valve. So a single event almost made 100 million.
That's a good point, actually. Yeah. I mean, if they do have that kind of synergistic way of selling, obviously, Overwatch and things in Overwatch with the league, then I could see them reaching something like that. I don't really count the buy-in money. I don't like to look at that as revenue because it's, that the buy-in money is more of an investment, right? Like, they're going to be spending that buy-in money to build whatever infrastructure is needed to get the league going. So, that would be pretty lame if they're taking that into account, because that shouldn't be taken into account, in my opinion.
I think they just say gross revenue, not nothing.
I know,
net.
But it's
operation costs.
Still, it's like, okay. So, I mean, that can be misleading to a degree. I think after the initial period, after you've got that, investment into building everything, then I think, whatever revenue is generated after that, if we get to, even eight digits, I think that would be pretty amazing. Like,
Let's be fair to this, right? Like, what if Morgan Stanley did a thing for LCS? It was like, if Riot were to sell cities to teams and blah, 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 and do this similar kind of structure that Overwatch League is looking to have, how much would they make annually with Morgan Stanley? I'd say it'd be over 100 million.
Yeah, I think so too.
Because that's just already has the backing of viewers.
They already sold broadcast rights to MLB for however much that was.
Yeah, that's a good point. But... yeah. That's a no-brainer, though, because we you already see how many viewers the LCS gets. The thing about Overwatch is we're still waiting. Like, this is literally still projections and investments on things that haven't happened yet. So that's why I'm still a little bit anxious, really want them to execute well. And, the more hype that comes with it, the more expectation everybody's going to have, like, Morgan Stanley saying this, then there's going to be investors that have expectations of this too. So, it's more pressure. It's just, if it works, then it's going to be super epic. Awesome. If it doesn't, then it's just going to be a big fail, like an abysmal type of thing. So, of course we're all hoping that it succeeds, and, I just don't know if these articles actually help or not. Do you think they help, like, this type of thing?
I mean,
I don't think it
right
helps,
now,
to be honest.
Like, I'd rather go into it with low expectations.
Yeah,
than
me
go
too.
With super high expectations.
Exactly. I would totally like to have them be able to have the best possibilities or highest probability of succeeding. And, if you've got people expecting 100 million, that's going to be hard to even reach that.
But, yeah, I mean, the industry is already overinflated with the amount of money pouring in.
Mm-hmm, right.
It's good for a lot of people. It's amazing for the player, for some players and teams and team owners. But the concern is that if it doesn't
long term, though, man,
pan out, yeah, then where's the money going to go? It's going to dry up one day, but we'll see.
Yeah. All right.
Time to raise our casting rates.
Savitar in chat.
God, we don't want to see that, man. That's like...
Savitar in chat says Blizzard has got some big balls. You are correct, Savitar. It's very true.
They got big balls, yeah.
This is what we said when the OW League was announced at BlizzCon. It was like, hey, man, they're trying something. They are trying something new and different and at a scale that we've maybe never seen before. And that's awesome.
We never really talked too much about the whole Nate and Andrew thing, right? Just that whole slide and just some of the things that have been coming from all, just those presentations he's been doing recently.
Yeah.
What are y'all's thoughts on that? Like, what are your thoughts on seeing the 16 cities? And, you know, those are all illustration, you know, illustrative or whatever.
Check the asterisk.
Exactly. Okay.
This is not for sure. This is not the final list.
Yeah, this is not final, but
an illustration.
It's definitely a guideline, though. I mean, I'm sure they're hoping for something like this or something that resembles this. I don't know if it's 16 teams, but you know what he showed there, what were cities that were not just in NA. And you know, the original plan, at least when all this news first came out, was that it's probably only going to be NA in the first season. So I guess first question is that, are we expanding out of NA right from the start? What do you guys think?
So I sort of always, like, everyone has been under this assumption that you have to be an NA team in an NA city to play in the OW League, and it's all going to be in SoCal. And I've still never seen, like, this written, proven anywhere. Like, everyone seems to be under this assumption, including, like, all the teams. So I'm going to assume they know something probably that I don't, that, yes, it probably will be based in NA. But I have never operated under the assumption that this wouldn't be a completely global league. I think that was always the intention. It might take place in one location for the sake of convenience and connectivity and LAN servers and all that, and coaches and, you know, the infrastructure and all that stuff. But I was always under the assumption that this was going to be completely global. And actually, I just tried to drop the tweet for you if you want to pop it up on stream.
Okay. Send me it again. I think you just, oh, there it is. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, it's Los Angeles, New York, Boston, D.C., Dallas, San Francisco, Seattle, Chicago, Miami, Paris, Frankfurt, London, Shanghai, Toronto, Seoul, and Mexico City is what's in this, like, slide that's just showing what it could be like down the road. Obviously, guys, there is a huge asterisk here. Please note the asterisk. Still, it's really fun to look at this and just, like, fantasize about the future. Just seeing the slide alone got me, I'll be honest, it got me fucking pumped. Like, this is just imagining, starting to imagine the teams, like, oh, who's going to be on the San Francisco team? Like, Joe Lacob, like, the part owner of the Warriors, invested in Team Liquid. Mm-hmm. Is it going to be, like, the San Francisco Liquids? Like, I don't know. Just starting to play around with those ideas in my head is extremely exciting and fun. It's also fun to just theorycraft about this list of cities. For me, I was kind of surprised by how few Asian cities were on this list. So we'll see once the announcements actually come out. But I would imagine there being more than one Korean team, for instance.
Yeah.
I know that Taiwan's a pretty big market for Blizzard and this game in particular. So I thought that there might be a Taipei location. But, you know, it's still fun to look at this.
I was going to say, why don't they just play in the China League? And I was like, oh, yeah, that's I know why they don't play in the China League now.
Right, right. No, the less the Asian cities, you know, and teams that they're going to be, then we are going to get this bit of fragmentation, at least from the standpoint of global Overwatch, right? In the particularly in the beginning, because you'll have these giant Asian leagues that are going on at the same time as Overwatch League, and you know, at least from a storyline standpoint of best team and all that business, it's going to be separated for a while. We're not going to actually know who the best team probably in Overwatch is.
That's half the fun of Worlds, isn't it? Like a League of Legends, like you have NALCS, mm-hmm. ELCS, you have LPL, you have LCK, and then they all collide for the MSI and for the finals.
Yeah, but
like makes it so epic.
It is make it epic, but that's all part of the same league. This won't be the case, right? I think this will be.
I don't imagine.
Stuff.
I'd imagine, like, over time, there'll be an NA-only league, there'll be an EU-only league, there'll be a
Korea-only
league.
Yeah, I think so, over time, sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Just this first season will be, just a little bit of working stuff out. But, what do you think, Jason, overall? Like, you think this is indicative of anything?
I think most of my thoughts have already been said by Ben. Mm-hmm. The only thing I want to add to it is that I remember there was a tricky thing Riot used to do where they would like leak information and say like someone like had someone post about it or something like that, like on an account that wasn't related to Riot. And then from there, they would get to gauge the community's reaction. And if it was really negative, they wouldn't do it and say, oh, yeah, we never planned to do it. But if it was positive, they'd be like, yeah, well, that's what we want to do. Or if it was really negative, then they're like, no, we don't ever want to do that. So we're always seem good in the public's eye. I'm not kidding. Riot literally did this.
Yeah.
I'm not saying this is that, but I'm saying this can be like a little bit of a way into it because they know people are going to be tweeting pictures of this. I mean, luckily the little asterisk was put in there, but that could like get the general's opinion of like the general population's opinion of what's going on and like what teams are there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying well, it is. I'm just saying there's always that potential.
I mean, they have to launch this thing at the end of the year. At least that's what they said was the general timeline, or what people assume is the general timeline. If you know, you got to start taking these steps. Maybe this isn't the final list, but it's got to be indicative of something. It's got to be indicative of where their head's at least. We're running out of time, man. There's only a few more months before this thing is supposed to launch.
I'm really curious as to, you know, how they're planning, what the number of teams and the structure is going to be. Or, I mean, are they planning this and they're like, okay, let's just hypothetically, it's 16 teams, we're going to get 16 bids and that's it. Or is it more like, hey, you know what? We're getting like 24 bids. So why don't we make this first season 24 teams instead? You know, and hopefully we have 24 cities, right? I mean, there's definitely 24 cities. But, I'm wondering if they're going to adapt based on the number of interested investors, or they're just set on this. I feel like they should be set on this, given that they need to prepare, right? Just what all these what the schedule is going to be and all that kind of thing. But I don't know. If they want to get max out just how much money goes in, then they would do the latter. What do you think they're going to do?
Actually, one thing that I just added another link to our script. One thing that you guys mentioned and some people in chat were talking about is like, I could see a system where you have the central main Overwatch League with these 16 teams, and then you still have some ancillary tournaments that maybe have some sort of wild card slot, maybe into like the playoffs or something like that. Because the reason I say this is because it was just announced last week that there is a new Blizzard-funded esports stadium in Taiwan, and the Asia-Pacific Overwatch League is going to be launched there. So maybe that's why Taipei is not on the list. Maybe Taipei and Taiwan will have its own Overwatch tournament, and then maybe the winner of that gets put into a wild card tournament for like the last slot into a playoffs or something like that. That could be an interesting way of expanding the OWL even to other regions and other areas that may not have a team that really can compete necessarily on the same level. I mean, you drew the analogy to Riot, and you know, this could be in a way somewhat similar to what they do for Worlds, where you have like the main LCS and you have the big Korea League, but you also have a league in Turkey, a league in Brazil, a league in Taiwan, and like those teams can all battle it out for like the final playoff slot. That actually could be kind of cool.
Yeah, I just think that would be not the same as, you know, any of these traditional sports leagues, right? And so
true.
You know, that would be more similar to what we've seen in esports. And I feel like what they're trying to do here is break ground. And
well, if it was traditional NA sports, we would have an NA only league and then say we're best in the world.
So. Okay. Ouch.
I mean, technically, that's what we do, isn't it? World Series, the Super Bowl, we're the best in the world, but we're the only ones that play this game.
Are you even American anymore?
I technically so.
Well, okay. But that's not so basic. Okay, football, we are the only people that play. Baseball, that's not true. All the best players come here. But same with basketball.
I mean, you're not wrong.
I'm not wrong. That's right. I'm right.
That's technically not right.
Why isn't it right?
Because you don't actually compete against teams from other countries in the world to say you're the best in the world. You just take players.
It's not the Olympics. Okay, the Olympics is, I guess, what you're talking about. But you know, there it is, the top league. You know, that is where all the best players go and try to, you know, make it or get a contract, right? I mean, the teams go and find them too, right? Play them a ton of money. It's like ridiculous amounts of money they pay. But all right. Well, I think we've got some time for a few questions. We've got one that's emailed to us, and if you're interested in sending us an email question, go ahead and do that by emailing theoverview@chainmanv.tv, and we'll read them out each week. Brian M. asks, what are some good ways to practice your aim? I feel like I can easily hit all bots on the training ground, but still lose a bunch of 1v1s in games.
Super easy. Make a custom game. Put yourself versus all Annas. Headshot only, 500% damage, 500% damage taken, 0% cooldown. Lijiang Tower, go.
Okay, yeah, I think that's pretty good.
Thank you, Sadie, for that. Credit to, shout out to you.
Yeah.
Yeah, then? A lot of people do the Anabots. I always just warm up against in the training mode. For me, when I'm warming up, I'm not necessarily trying to put myself in the mindset of like, oh, it's time to get intense about a real game, and like I really have to, like, you know, you're not worrying about positioning. All I'm doing is getting warm, getting my mouse hand warm in those cases, and that works for me. You know, making sure to just do that every day, 10, 15 minutes before you play on ranked. That's what works for me. But then again, my hit scan aim is not really the greatest. So I don't know. There's a lot of good material out there. We've actually talked about it and showed some links on the show before. I think there's, God,
yeah, there's a couple. I think there's two ways to approach it. You could either
Overwatch Dojo or something.
Yeah, Overwatch Dojo is a good one. I've used Aim Booster before, which is like, just a web site that has like little mini web apps that are geared for you to, you know, track and, you know, just aim shoot type of, you know, really basic aim shoot and tracking type of exercises. So I think you can approach it that way, like from a very basic level, or you can go into what Jason said, like actually in game and practice, you know, practical things, which is shooting heads and things like that. So if you want to go to the site, you can go to aimbooster.com. That's a pretty good one. There's actually several of them. Like you said, Dojo is a good one too. And yeah, I think that's the best way to start. I think you have to like build up your fundamental FPS ability, and then, you know, after that, maybe warming up, it will do you a lot of good.
Also, doing like a 6v6 Widow headshot only is really cool too. Like made my Widow so much better just doing that, because you get used to like having to do flicks really quickly and like where Widows can hide and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Yeah. So over time, you'll get better. You just have to do it every day for a good amount. Any other questions in the chat, guys? Because that's the only email one we had. Maybe Ben, keep an eye out on chat to see if we got anything.
Keep an eye out. I had one more thing that we didn't really jump into in too much detail. And it's just the lineup of teams in Overwatch Pit for NA.
Oh, yeah.
Another tournament with no Cloud9 and no Envious. It's just like...
Are they above it?
This is something I bring up every show. So I apologize, guys. If you've listened to shows before, you're probably sick of me talking about this subject. But it's just yet another tournament without several of the biggest teams, most talented teams, the teams that people care about the most, that they want to watch, the most skilled teams. No Cloud9, no Envious, no NRG. We don't get to see them either. So we're going to have yet another tournament that's just like, oh... It's like most of the good teams, but except for like the top tier, which is why I'm really glad Rogue is playing at least.
I mean, to be fair to Envious, though, they're like in Korea still. Like a good majority of them are still in Korea.
Why?
Just for Apex to finish it off.
Practice.
I mean,
okay.
Yeah, practicing's the best teams. I mean, to be fair, like the price pool is like 15 grand, but if you're NRG, I feel like you have no excuse to not be playing in this. Like Cloud9, maybe because, yeah, like Apex, they need some time. And I know Mendo is like still in Sweden, but I want to see NRG in there. Like, that's the big name for me.
I know what you mean, though, but Ben, like, I just want to see
had
the good
really,
team.
Really good tournament.
Yeah.
And since Overwatch Open.
It's true.
Straight up, other than Korea.
And that was 7 months ago. That was a long time ago. So I know, I feel your pain, dude. I feel that some of these guys, sure, they, you know, they should practice. They're practicing in Korea and things like that. Some of these guys just don't want to have a bad showing. You know, like they're just scared to lose that is what I'm thinking. And, you know, I it does so much more for the scene if you do get these clashes of, you know, the big titans and or the big fan favorites and you know, having that happen, right? Or at least having the ability to say that this team is the best, or maybe these teams are the best three, and we can say that right now, like an NA or whatever. More and more of these kind of tournaments, I don't know, we're just going to decide who is next up on the rung, I guess, you know, like the Immortals and the Selfless and, again, the LG Evils. You know, I think Rogue's like a step above these. You know, Rogue's beat all these teams already, right? So that's why they're favorites going into this tournament, and you know, the biggest storyline will be if anybody can beat Rogue. That's it. Instead of, you know, can Rogue beat some of these guys? Actually, Misfits is in there too. So Misfits is the other team.
We'll finally get to see CLG though. So that's good.
That's true.
And we haven't seen Ryze play in a while. FaZe, how are they doing right now? So it's still an interesting tournament. But and to be clear, guys, I'm not blaming the players. I totally understand if you're not comfortable, if you're not ready, if you don't want to play, if it's the prize pool isn't big enough, whatever. There's a million reasons. I'm not blaming the teams or players. I'm just, as a fan, it sucks. Like,
we
haven't had a really good tournament at all in months. So anyway, that's my thought.
It shows too. It shows in viewership.
It has big time.
Like, we would have so many more people watching, Overwatch esports if we actually had tournaments that had the best teams in it. So it's unfortunate we've been in this state, and we're in the position where we have to wait for Overwatch League. That's kind of where we are, where the teams will have to play in it and want to play in it. But until then, I guess we'll just have to be satisfied with these type of tournaments. Any other questions right now? Or no? Anything? Anything good?
Just looking through chat. Yeah, guys, let us know if you have any questions, if you have any discussion points, if you think we're dead wrong about our Overwatch League predictions.
Please tell us.
Whatever it is, let us know.
Okay, well, maybe one more minute. If there's nothing else, then we'll wrap it up. Sometimes there's just no questions. I mean, this week has been just a little bit slower in terms of news. We usually have about 5, 6, 7 things to talk about, but not this week.
Mother.
Oh, what? I hate you, Tivik. When will Jason Kaplan ever queue with me?
But
Tivik, I'll queue with you, man.
Counterpit isn't the only one banning you, son.
Screw that. That guy. I'll queue with you, buddy. Did you just ban him?
I'm banning him for the memes. Like, Counterpit banned him for the memes.
Did you ban him in my chat?
Hell yeah.
Oh my God, you were a dick.
All right, I'm taking away your mod powers,
exactly.
Jason.
Exactly, I am too. You've gone too far. Right.
This, you don't even know. I've asked him what to do so many times, and he's like, oh, I got scrims, or oh, no, or oh, I'm going to sleep.
He's a busy guy, dude, man. What do you expect?
God, I hate him so much sometimes. I unbanned him right away, guys.
Chaos Head says, I think it's rather childish not to watch because the best teams are not playing. But that's
it's
not
childish.
We're still going to watch.
I never said we watch. I'm talking about just your average viewer there, or even somebody that doesn't know anything about Overwatch. I mean, you know how it is on Twitch. The bigger the number that they see on front page or whatever, or in the categories or the game categories, the more likely people are going to come by and check it out. And right now we've got events that get 10, 20,000, you know, sometimes a little bit more than that. You know, it doesn't make big of a blip on the radar. I mean, Ben knows better than everybody else. This guy like looks at the numbers every day. So that's not enough to make a splash, or at least have random folks check it out and maybe learn about Overwatch. So, all right.
XX Momentum XX asks, do you think that Overwatch's genre will hurt as a spectator sport? I love the game, but I don't think FPS can present itself as well as something top down like a MOBA. And to this, I will always go back to the example of CS. CS 1.6 was basically the biggest esport in the Western world for quite some time, many years ago, like a decade ago. But it never really hit the mainstream when StarCraft II was coming out, when League of Legends was coming out, when Street Fighter IV was coming out. All these games came out and they were blowing up viewership-wise. And everyone said, yeah, of course they're blowing up. They're so much better to watch. Nobody can watch CSGO. It's impossible. You can't catch all the action. It's so hard for new viewers. Flash forward 10 years. Or not 10 years, but flash forward. Well, shit, it's been like 7 years.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, CSGO is by far the biggest esport in the Western world right now. Well, maybe not by far. League of Legends still doing pretty well. And, you know, in Russia, Dota is still pretty huge. But CSGO, now one of the biggest esport in the entire world, clearly one of the top esports in the Western world. And when people thought this game was not watchable, I used to hear this all the time, up and down from esports luminaries, people who are in the scene, people out of the scene. Everyone said CSGO was not a watchable esport, or CS, back in the day. Now look at it. Now it's one of the most watchable esports, just because of better tools, better casters, more spectators, spectators becoming like professional spectators becoming a thing. So we have a long ways to go.
It's getting FPS there, man.
It's hard to watch.
Man, watch Apex this season, guys. Like they were able to catch a lot of the great plays this season. I mean, I can only like the other, I think Friday. I mean, there might have been just one play like the cameraman didn't catch that was, you know, some kind of some early kill that they didn't miss. But for the most part, they're catching everything. You know, like we actually get to watch these things happening, like, you know, from first person point of view or whatever. So it's getting better. The casting obviously is always is first rate, and we're getting there. We're definitely getting there. It's going to still always be hard showing the crazy like shaking stuff, right? But you know, all the other things are improving. Like each time there's these big events. So I still believe we're gonna get there. Hopefully we'll see some more spectator tools soon, though. I don't know when it's going to be exactly, but hopefully we'll see some more of those.
Well, just go back and watch the World Cup, man. The World Cup had such great production value because mm-hmm. they had six observers. They had a PC recording every player's individual point of views, so they could do recaps and highlights. So,
you know what's the difference, guys? Everybody's saying that, oh, CSGO is just better. All it takes, guys, is for Widow to be back in the metagame. Then all of a sudden, you have like the same type of like viewing experience. So right now, it just happens to be, you know, like dive comp or, you know, before we, I don't even think, you know, well, we talked about before that when Pharah was in the meta, Pharah was a great viewing experience, you know, so it just depends on who the dominant or what the dominant comp is for the viewing experience to change pretty drastically. And that in itself is a challenge that they'll have to solve. But, you know, that's, I'm just pointing out that it is possible for Overwatch to be pretty similar to that. Not as slow paced. I mean, so the people that are saying that's slow paced at times, because, you know, obviously you get down to one-on-one, it's a different thing than 6v6 the entire time. But, you know, we could watch, you know, time moved on Widowmaker, and it's a similar experience to an op, you know, view, that type of thing. Okay, well, anyways, I think that's going to be it for questions. Now everybody's going nuts now that we're wrapping up.
Now that we got the juices flowing.
Exactly. But
everyone's juice is flowing, but Jason right now. Jason's like, I want to go play some rigged.
I just got nothing to say about like some of these questions. Like, to be honest,
he just wants to cast.
I guess I recover my.
He just wants to cast. That's it, man.
Nah, I'm gonna use my new PC.
All right.
Well, play some Minecraft on this bad boy.
Minecraft.
Got to make full use of my triple 1080s.
Nice.
SLI.
Blah, triple blah, blah. 1080s?
Do you actually have SLA 1080s?
No. Oh, two of them?
That'd be sick.
Oh my god. Do you have a TI? That's the question, right?
No.
Okay.
Hey, I got a 1080 for free. I'm not going to complain if it's a TI or not.
I'm just wondering how much love you get, man, from those guys. All right, let's wrap up. Let's do some shout outs. Jason, where can people find you, man?
Twitter.com/JakeKaplan, twitch.tv/JasonKaplan. JKAP1AN on Instagram.
Instagram.
JKAPANESL on Snapchat. That's it. Okay. Oh, YouTube Overdrive OW. There you go. There's my shout out.
I forgot your parents, dude. I'm really disappointed.
No, you said where can people find me? You didn't say give me shout outs.
You know, this is still the shout out section.
The end.
You know that.
This is the end part.
Yeah. I'm gonna have to tell Mama Kaplan that. So your son just doesn't love you anymore.
Shout out to my parents for giving me the opportunity to be here, and ESL for hiring me so I can do my job. Chatman for hosting the show. Ben for always making me feel good about my SR.
Oh, damn.
Ouch.
Ben, shout outs. Where can people find you?
Sure, yeah. If you want to watch my struggles through low to mid masters, I swear I'm going to get back to GM this season at some point. I swear to God, my initial goal was top 500, so we're a far cry from there. At this point, all I need is Tavik to carry me, buddy. Come on, dude. No problem.
You can follow me on Twitter. Like
just fish sticks, as it's spelled right here. Same on Twitch. Same on Twitter.
Is
just because Jason said his Instagram, I'm fishsticks1 on Instagram. I've been posting amazing food photos lately. So
wow,
if you like that,
man, you guys are into Instagram now. Man, I didn't even realize you guys had Instagram accounts.
I just post my meals that I cook at home.
So here's the real question.
Amazing
Ben.
Food. He really does.
Here's the real question, Ben. Can Tavik even play with you?
I don't know.
Isn't in there?
That's
what
I was saying. All his accounts are like top 100.
Oh
shit!
There's a thousand. You've got to qualify to even play with Kavik, dude. So you might not even be able to group with him. You might even be able to group with him.
I think his lowest account is like 4,500.
Oh, never mind. I'll see you later, Tavik.
Oh my god. Rough. I'll round things out by thanking both of you guys, Fish Sticks and Jason, of course, for doing this show. Everybody watching right now, thanks a lot for hanging out with us, asking those questions at the end. And if you want to check out the VODs, if you missed any of the beginning, you can check that out on youtube.com/championv, as well as all the other episodes we've done in the past. Again, you can find the show on iTunes. Just go to your iTunes podcast and search for The Overview or Overwatch, and you'll find us. And leave us a review if you like the show. I think that's it. Oh, follow the Twitter account for The Overview too. The Overview GG is what it is. Somebody asked also, when's the next streamer showdown Overwatch? I'm trying to plan a super epic one, so I'm kind of waiting until that happens before we do another one. So I would say in the next, I don't know, maybe month or two, there'll be another one for sure. But it's going to be pretty sweet if I can get it to happen. But that's going to be it, guys, for The Overview. So for Jason Kaplan, Fish Sticks, and myself, Champman V, we'll see you next week. Bye.
Later.